So our next presentation is going to be presented by Amber Campbell. She's the coordinator for our Great Plains Grazing, and she's also heavily involved in our social science and some of the messaging of what we're hearing from our producers and what we're trying to communicate out to the to the producers. So with that, okay, I'll turn it to you.
So yeah, so I'm here to give sort of the rogue social scientist presentation. So there won't be a whole lot of discussion of greenhouse gases or how those work out or numbers. There will be, well, there's some stats. All right. So Great Plains Grazing. So I'm talking about the flexibility to cope. So how are producers perceiving uncertainty and adaptive strategies, and how can we help them to maintain resilience given what we know about the current climate and what's potentially going to happen in the future? And so just sort of a breakdown, since we haven't gotten there, Kansas, Texas, and Oklahoma are in the top five cattle producing states, and so BMP adoption is necessary to help them increase their resiliency, both of their individual production systems and also of the industry as a whole in this region. And so that's why Great Plains Grazing got funded. So some basic environmental information for those of you who aren't Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas people. We have these steep gradients in both precipitation and temperature. And so that just means that if we have a little bit of a shift in any of those directions, we end up having a significant shift in what producers experience from year to year. And in the last couple of years, so this is the percent of each of these states that were in some degree of drought. So you can see there's a very significant period of extended and varying severity of drought between about 2011 and 2015. And so the research we're conducting was in 2014 and 2015. And so this is in the context of these producers having an extended experience of drought. Also, in addition to that, we have these producers are experiencing this increase in these drought to pluvial dipoles. Some of our climate scientists on the project are working on this. So we have these incidences where you go from an extreme drought to an excessive precipitation situation. So you go from a very dry year to a very wet year. Those are increasing in frequency. So overall, what we have is producers who are dealing with a situation of increased droughts, extreme heat, extreme rainfall events, and all of this has sort of significant negative impacts on the productivity and profitability. I frequently talk with our climate scientists, and we sort of joke about how basically the extreme variability, which is general for the climate, is becoming even more variable. And so that's what these producers are dealing with. So we have best management practices. These are practices that help producers effectively manage those resources and prevent environmental damage. Some of the ones we looked at were rotational grazing, lowering stocking rates, using improved grasses, having improved watering systems, and also the use of cover crops and alternative forages. This is something that's become a big part of our project in terms of helping producers adopt these and manage them well. So we have all these best management practices, and we know what they theoretically are, and if Matt can get every dairy producer in the world, he can get a 7% reduction in greenhouse gases. But we also have a lot of producers that are not adopting these best management practices. And so we're looking at the what is going on. And so a lot of people have expressed frustration or referenced this as sort of an unexplained phenomenon, like we don't know why. I actually had a moment in a meeting with our extension team at the very beginning of the project where one of them said, we've been telling them to do the same thing for 30 years and they just won't do it. And so for me, as a social scientist, this was like an aha moment. I had this moment of like, oh, so what's going on is these extension professionals are frequently working with an information deficit model. So basically, you're assuming that the problem is that the person doesn't know about or doesn't fully understand what you're trying to tell them to do. And then if you can simply provide them with enough information, or the right information, or you can provide it in a way that they can understand better, you'll get them to do the thing that you want. And sometimes this works, sometimes it's just they don't quite get it and they need more information to decide that that's a good practice for them. But other times, these producers are facing real barriers and constraints in their operations that either make it infeasible for them to adopt a practice or unattractive. And so the thing we need to keep in mind is frequently these producers, it's not that they're simply not adopting, it's that they're actively choosing not to adopt these practices. And so we need to work on how do we get to helping them adopt these practices. I'm going to really skim our methodology for sampling, for surveying and interviewing, just because you can ask me about that later. We surveyed about 13,000 people. We have a response rate around 18%. That goes up to about 30% if we eliminate everybody who just never, ever answered the phone. So probably closer to about 30. We asked 39 total questions. I'm going to cover two of them from that survey in this presentation for time. So we asked the producers, is climate changing? I like to reference this as sort of the most boring graph ever. It's very evenly distributed. We have this 8-point scale from no and I'm very sure to yes and I'm very sure. However, I do think it is it's good that we have 57% of them are on the yes end of that spectrum. So like they are aware that climate is changing. This is a concern for them. And then when we break that down and we ask them, climate change is caused by what? What do you think is causing climate change? Is it humans? Is it natural forces? Is it a combination of those two? Is climate change just not happening? We also included something else, but that was so rarely answered that I just eliminated it for the clarity on this chart. And then I broke that down into the people who said, yes, climate is changing, and the people who said, no, climate is not changing. And I think it's really informative that most of those no's didn't respond with climate change is not happening when you ask them about causal factors. They actually end up answering natural or some combination. So there is a difference in how they're thinking about those two things. It's not that these people aren't aware that climate can and does change. They experience that, and they have experienced that. By the way, the average age, the median and mean of the producers who responded to our survey, 69. So we are dealing with someone that was as young as 23, but the median age is 69. So we're working with a relatively older profession than several other professions. I mean, they're past retirement age for most industries. So when we break this down, most of them are actually answering both. So they are recognizing a human contribution, but they're not necessarily saying that's the primary factor. Then when we break those down into their attitudes towards adapting to climate variability, obviously the people who believe that humans or both, they're generally on the high end in terms of their agreement with that statement. But even the people who think that climate change is not happening, almost half or more than half in almost all of those cases believe that we should be doing something to adapt to it. So they think that either I or consultants should be helping me, or industry or extension or the government. The government is actually the only one where less than 50% of the people who say it's not happening should be doing something. So we get into our interview methodology. There were 43 interviews that actually went and spoke with producers for a number of hours in some cases, just asking them about their practices and what they're doing. Those were audio recorded and transcribed, and then we looked at them for themes. And there is going to be a whole lot of quotes. I am not going to read those quotes to you for time, because I think I'm not sure what my time is, but I think we're good. And then we broke those down into, are these small, medium, or large producers? And then how many BMPs have they adopted? So we have high adopters, medium adopters, and low adopters. And so they end up broken down in these this table to kind of give you an idea of what's going on. So we have some big adopters or some high adopters with large herds. We have some low adopters with large herds. They're kind of all over the map. And then in terms of those pseudonyms, we have pseudonyms and their names begin with A, B, or C, depending upon which region they were in, just to kind of help you track what sort of ecological context we're talking about. So the A's are from the Flint Hills, the B's are from the Southwest Tablelands, and the C's are from the Central Great Plains. But one of the things that really came out of this is that the ability to be flexible and to sort of change things up based on the current conditions was really important, especially to those at a high level adoption. You'll notice the two people who are really pointing out this flexibility issue are, in fact, high adopters, which is part of what we found, is that the BMP adoption increases the flexibility for the producer and the resiliency of their operations. And some of the things that they were specifically talking about that were helping them in terms of their flexibility and resilience: improved watering systems, so having access to clean, high quality, and available water, having burning practices, reducing undergrowth, as well as making sure that their forage was still available, they weren't losing forage production capacity to red cedar encroachment, rotational grazing, which was allowing them to sort of shift their pasture, as well as to run more cattle on their pasture, which is really important to these producers. Obviously, if you can run more cattle, you can make more money. And then cover crops and alternative forages. So of the people who are adopting these practices, they have very positive things to say about the practices. But then we get into those sort of barriers to people for adopting these practices. So extension, frequently is speculated, things like financial reasons or fear or water availability or drought. And I'll get into drought in a little bit. So this study found that some of the major ones that actually they say are water availability and quality, leasing and renting of land, and also the availability of skilled labor, which I think we don't necessarily think of as much. So drought. So part of what's going on in drought, and you can see from these quotes, drought makes a lot of difference in your decisions in what you do and how you manage. And so these guys are thinking about drought. And so what happens is actually drought is forcing producers to reevaluate their practices and to think really critically about what's going on. It's one of those moments where you can, you know, something might work in a condition where you're not experiencing drought for an extended period of time, and then all of a sudden when you're in a drought, you realize, I'm going to have to do something if this is going to become a regular occurrence. And so water availability and quality. So these are the barriers. So, and this is usually linked to rotational grazing. Obviously, you cannot graze cattle on a pasture where there is no water. And so that's where drought comes in on both ends of the spectrum. Sometimes they would have water available in a pasture in a wet year, but in a dry year there would be no water available. So it would limit your ability to rotationally graze in those years. But the leasing and renting of land, I think, and this is linked to those ideas of like financial concerns. So in Kansas, several of our producers are talking about the fact that it's just hard to find land, like grass to rent to feed to cows. And so that is actually a problem for those of them who do not own all of the land that they're on. Finding land to rent to utilize for cattle production is very difficult, which means you can't be as selective in terms of landlord as you may want to be. And so landlords actually are a big constraint in this whole issue. Okay, excellent. So landlords, don't worry, I'm near the end. Landlords are a big constraint here in terms of their opinions of best management practices and what they feel people should do. And part of the issue is also their lack of knowledge and understanding. So this could be where the information deficit comes in. Among landlords, so if you have absentee landowners, they don't necessarily understand management practices and how they key into ecosystem services or the importance of burning and those sorts of things. Also, Oklahoma school land. In Oklahoma, they have this system where you can lease school land, but you can only do that for 5 years at a time. So they have like an auction sort of system. So they don't necessarily know that if they invest money into, say, fencing for rotational grazing, that they will be able to recoup that money and be able to maintain the lease of that land. So if it would take you more than a five-year lease to recoup the investment on a BMP, there would be no sense in doing it. And then also time and labor. So a lot of these people are either part-time or can't do as much labor as they used to be able to do since they're at median age of 69 years old. And that was actually something that came out in our surveys. We did ask them, what is a inhibiting factor for you in terms of adopting new practices? 43% of them said they lacked the time to try new practices, and 53% said they lacked the labor to try new practices. So time and labor are key constraints on whether or not they can adopt these practices. Just some other variables that were barriers, moisture, regrowth of grass, family traditions, so the whole, like, my dad's run this farm this way for the last 100 years, and by God, I'm going to keep running it that way, can be a barrier. So basically our suggestions is, in addition to the producers needing flexibility in these systems, we need to be flexible in how we engage with them and what we can suggest to them. So we need to get into a method of providing extension professionals with the information they need in order to really engage in dialogue with producers and find out what are their specific constraints to adopting these practices and helping them find sort of, even if they can't adopt what would we consider a best management practice, to look at those better management practices. Okay, that's it. That's our website, by the way, if you want to go look at the Great Plains Grazing stuff.
Thank you. Great job.